Hey, I'm Kat, mom of three and founder of Ritual, the company setting a new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant with my first daughter, I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and thinking, what's in this stuff? All I found were vitamins high in heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and lacking in the very essential nutrients we need. I believe women deserve to know what they are putting in their bodies and why. So at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job to reinvent the prenatal vitamin. We scoured the world for the best quality ingredients backed by clinical studies and third-party tested for heavy metals and microbes. And this year, we were awarded the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project, the supplement safety certification that tests for 200 harmful chemicals and toxins. With Ritual, you'll know where your ingredients come from and why we use them. Join our family of skeptics with 40% off your first month when you visit ritual.com/podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bolton from Bolton. This is the show where my brother Josh and I set each other up for fun and insightful hockey talk. How's it going over there, Josh, in Brookfield?
It's going great.
It's going great. That's always it. Always the long answer. Okay. It's going great up in there. It's going great here too. It's the off season now. We took on some of the off season moves going on and stuff like that last time. I think what we'll do today is get back into something that we missed out on a long time ago. We had asked for some listener questions a while ago. We got some responses and then we took up a few in part with other episodes, but we never really took up all of the questions. We spent a lot of time going into the playoffs and kind of taking on the stories and discussing what was all the action that was happening. And really, I have a lot of fun taking up these kind of questions more than anything. I don't know about you. Anyway, we had a couple from some boys that you know, Jack and Finn Grinton. Jack and Finn, I'm really sorry it's taken so long. Here we are for you today, taking up the questions that were so pressing to you. But here we are. But look, they've been on my mind, Jack and Finn. I've been thinking about them, and here we are to take them up. So, Josh, let's go ahead with it. They asked about we'll take up a few of theirs. So one of them they asked was about the All-Star format. What do we think of it, etc. So do you want to begin on that?
I love the All-Star format. The game itself, like having a full game with three lines or whatever it was, and it was pretty bland. It's had its past its due date, and they needed to spice it up a little bit. I mean that weekend is for the kids, really, to try and appease the young fans, keep the audience engaged. It's not for necessarily diehard hockey people because they're probably going to watch it anyway. But you always hear about people now saying, well, I'll never watch the All-Star game. The All-Star game is the worst. Get rid of it. So they had to change something. But going with the three-on-three, especially with Hockey Canada trying to push that for youth levels, they're trying to push small area games. They have been for a little while now. Okay. And now, you know, novice in most of the provinces in Canada is cross ice. They don't play full ice games anymore till Adam. And it's just great to see for those kids, the superstars doing that as well and seeing how much fun it can be. And honestly, the way it translates, I very much enjoy the skill it portrays out of these guys. There's things in hockey that you need the physicality for. You need to have that sort of extra a part of that game that just, it makes the game magic. I agree with that. So there's something lacking about people that look like, especially people that can do it the best, kind of look like they're not even trying. They don't want to be that guy to try. Where the three-on-three format really opens things up where they can do more things where in general they wouldn't be as much contact anyway. It looks a little more realistic to hockey and it really showcases some of the things these guys can do. And my favorite part is the last 10 minutes when they really start to care about the games and how they're going, they realize, mm-hmm. You know what? We can win this thing. So let's go out and win it. And that sort of pushing them that way, it's a whole different way to see these guys. Everyone likes the 3-on-3 overtime. And to have it be a 3-on-3 All-Star game with the best of the best is, it's just a lot of fun to watch. Do I think it long-term? I don't think, like, they'll have to come up with something. I think it might get stale pretty quickly. But I think for a few years, this is a great way to go about things. I'm not really that bored with it yet. And we've had our we've had our special circumstances, like the John Scott entry, which I have, mm-hmm. I had a lot to say on. That's a whole other show, but it just, it added that element where you can get behind players, maybe with the fan voting that you wouldn't normally see. And you could see in 3-on-3 that they're actually very talented people too. They're in the NHL maybe for a different reason, but you're also in the NHL because you're good enough to be in the NHL. And you know, someone like John Scott really exemplified that. That was a magical moment that you wouldn't have been able to get in any other format, I don't think.
Yeah, he wouldn't have been scoring in 5-on-5.
Right, exactly. It was just a great way to have that. And, you know, the way it goes with the way they have the teams divided, I enjoy that too. You get to see some certain combinations. And I just think I'm still having a lot of fun with it. And I'm not ready to see it go just yet.
Not ready to see it go. I'm right with you there. Like, I am not, I love this thing at the moment. I was thinking about it in terms of, like, looking back on when we were young and we enjoyed the All-Star games back, you know, Gretzky's getting 4 goals and Lemieux gets 4 goals and they win the truck. And it's pretty exciting, what, you know, historical performances in the All-Star game. And it was kind of a different game, like where you could kind of play almost a regular game, like a little less physical, obviously. They're not hacking, you know, taking people's arms off and legs off with hacks and all that. But so there's a little less physicality, but yet it was still a kind of game where, you know, some players stood out more than others. And you could score and you could have like these high scoring games because that's what the 80s were. But now the game is so tight and it's played so perfectly. Like you can almost just watch the game and you're just expecting what people are going to do. Here's how it comes. The gaps close. The guy dumps it in. You go and chase it. You get it back. Right. Everybody plays so perfectly that 5v5 with the best guys, there's nothing for them to do. Like it's just a really, it's an exciting game, like in the Olympics when you get the best guys playing, because they're adding that one you said about, they're adding the physicality where you need that to you know, gain inches and make space and really grind and work to you know, earn that space and the, you know, and to score. But you can't just play the flowing kind of lighter game that you could back, whereas the 80s could kind of translate that. So what you need, if you want these guys to kind of take it a little easy yet be able to score, you need to eliminate guys because you can't make your own space with physicality. You know what I mean? Like if it were 5v5, even the best guys, they would come up and play like skillfully, but skillfully means doing all the things so right that nobody, it's like a chess match. Nobody's going to make any moves, right? So you open it up 3-on-3 and you get to see these guys. Did you want to say?
That's a great point. No, that's a fantastic point, you know, about how structured they play and how disciplined they are. Everyone seems to be, the fourth line guys now are every bit as good as the second line guys used to be back in the day. And I'll bring up actually about your comment, you know, the game was, the All-Star games were different. One of the things that came out in my mind of the those classic games when there was no hockey being played and they kept showing classic ones, and some of them were the All-Star games, and there was like legit hitting and fighting even in some of them. Like there were legit body checks. There was a guy, I showed a tweet of Mario just being hacked down in front of the net. Like the legit, he was standing in front of the net and they cross-checked him in the back and did it so many times he went down and it would have been like a penalty. It's just one of those ones where you see in front of the net in every game now. And you'd never see that in an All-Star game today. No. But back then it was like the greatest player in the world and he's on sort of his vacation trying to, you know, and he's still getting hacked. He's the only, like, he almost retired. He retired from hockey because of all that stuff and he couldn't even get away with it in the All-Star game. Like, it just followed him everywhere. And now you'd never have that because you don't want to be that guy that does that to a superstar anymore. And, you know, it is completely changed. They wouldn't even have that opportunity because, like you said, they do play the game so well that by the time any contact happened in a situation like that, the players would have gotten rid of the puck well before that happens. They're just, there's no space.
Yeah, I suppose my recollection is a little, you know, just rosy or something. I guess, no, there probably was a lot more of that stuff. Concussions, let's chalk it up to that. I don't remember.
Like, that's back in the 70s and 80s, too. They were showing, like, classic games and leading in. The 90s, we saw a lot of scoring, but it was when also a slap shot from outside the blue line was a legitimate scoring chance too.
Yeah.
Right.
But still, you're talking about, it was an All-Star game. We got the All-Stars pit against each other and they're playing a game and that's what people want to see. So, which is not quite what it is anymore. It's more like, you know, there's a lot of money involved in this. We don't want to be hurting anybody. This is a big risk for teams and the league as well. Their stars are all out there. Let's not have anybody hurting anyone. And of course they understand that too. Like they're just, it's a whole different world with the speed and the size of them and all that. So they really have to take it a lot easier. You know, people just get hurt a little easier now these days because of the speed and the size and everything. And so I understand why it is changed and why you can't just play all out. So then, as we said, we remove guys and it's awesome. And I want to play off your point now. It's not so much about the All-Star game, but just what I'm encouraged to hear about youth hockey and stuff. You're saying they're playing a lot more small-sided games and they're trying to encourage that. And I remember in growing up playing soccer and training in soccer, it is all about, the training is all focused on small-sided games. You don't just play big, yes, giant game and let's go and practice. You play a lot of small-sided situations inside the cones, 4v3, 4v2, 5v3, 5v2. And what you're trying to do in a big game is to create outnumbered situations where you're 3v2 against some people and advance the ball and move around that way. So you're trying to look for these situations. And in hockey, it's much the same. As much as you can you create and operate with 3v3? Can you get away? Can you change it into 3v2? And of course, power plays are just that. But that's what it is. So if you have to be able to be good at small-sided games, 2v2, 3v3, and then translate to 5v5, you have to develop all the skills all the way. And of course, it was just known in soccer, that's how we trained. So of course, why isn't hockey training more small-sided stuff? I like just to hear the sound of that.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Well, I mean, we'll call that, and of course, of all the other stuff, I guess a final word on how do we like the whole All-Star thing. I want to add too that it is about the entertainment, right? You're looking for, like in basketball, you got the dunk contest. That's a big one. The home run derby in MLB. In hockey, you've got a few events that'll never change. It's the hardest shot, the accuracy, which is not that exciting, but the speed, the fastest guy, the hardest shot seems to be a big draw. And then these shootouts and stuff, which are kind of turn into a circus, but that's just, who cares about it, how well you are in a penalty shootout versus a goalie? It's not a big thing I need to see. So I don't mind putting the circus atmosphere in there, having the boys enjoy, getting the kids involved. It's kind of like a field day, family day, and everybody's having a great time. And you do get to see some pretty amazing stuff at the same time. So there's all of that. And then the showcase is really the games and how can they best showcase it? Well, now it's 3v3 and we do get it. And they're playing for it. You see these guys, they want to play. They don't play with the hitting and all that, and there isn't that much opportunity 3v3, but they're playing. It pretty much looks the same as a 3v3 in overtime in real hockey, except for that final, you probably wouldn't get that final drive to the net where the guy's going to maybe hit you. You might back away from that one and pull up and go for a better one. But other than that, you're pretty much getting what 3v3 looks like. So and with the best guys.
And I did kind of forget, you know, with the whole All-Star weekend, I kind of forgot about the skills competition element. I was focused on the game and that portion because the skills competition to me is like, it is what it is. Like, you can only do so many things. They had that strange event where you're shooting from the stands and it's like those old Wayne Gretzky commercials, you know, off the clock, off the seat C in row 7, nothing but net. It's pretty interesting the things they're trying to do, and you can see how the players are actually, you know, fairly game to try anything. You like to see that. I mean, they must feel ridiculous sometimes doing these things and being the first ones to try it. But the other thing I'll say that's really important I forgot, and is trying to include the female hockey players into stuff more. Mm-hmm. I think that's really awesome. I really enjoyed that they had the female, you know, the 3-on-3, and they had the some females taking part in the skills competition more and more. They need to do more of that.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. That was all exciting too. Just, I'm obviously bringing them in and seeing some of the awesome stuff. I was like thinking, I mean, when I saw some of the stuff they were doing, some of the little drags and the little finish and the dangles, I was like, I can't do that. Yeah. And it just shows you that, like, these days too, what is new in the game. You know, I say that some people are innovators, people like someone like Pavel Datsyuk shows you something new for the first time and you have never seen that. And then young people pick it up and other people pick it up. And now it's in the game at the junior level and the young people in the NHL. And then of course, in the women's game, it's all there. They're all doing stuff that we didn't do because it just didn't exist. Right. So, and they're just incorporating it as a basic standard. So it's just some awesome stuff to see. And it just, again, plays to the whole fun of the weekend. It's about including everybody, getting people involved in the game, all the kids, the family.
Every day we rise, challenging ourselves to work for what we believe in. At U.S. Border Patrol, protecting our borders is more than a job. It's a calling. Agents answer the call, working together to keep our country and communities safe. If you're ready for a new mission, join U.S. Border Patrol and go beyond. Learn more at cbp.gov/careers.
Must be at least 18 years old. Promo code, location, and other restrictions apply. See terms of use for details. Please play responsibly. Call 800-426-2537 for help.
Think you know sports? Then try to turn your sports knowledge into real money with the Sleeper app. The ultimate fantasy sports app that can turn game day into payday. With up to 100 times payout and your first deposit matched up to $500. Just download the Sleeper app and pick your favorite sports and players, like Christian McCaffrey's rushing yards. With more stats than any sports app, just choose two or more of your favorite players from pregame, live, or even across different sports. Pick more or less from the predicted stats and ka-ching. You could win up to 100 times your money if your pick wins. With the Sleeper app, you can make picks anytime, even after the game starts. With up to 100 times payout, what are you waiting for? Download Sleeper today and unlock one of the fastest growing fantasy sports apps in the world. Just go to the App Store, download the Sleeper app today, and use code SPORTS for up to $500 match on your first deposit. That's promo code SPORTS.
And, of course, exposing them to, you know, games and say, you know, if hockey's for everyone, you're showing people like, look, this is something to aspire to as well. You could be one of these girls. So it's pretty exciting for everyone. So Jack and Finn, there's a bit of our take on it. I'm going to ask you guys, what do you guys think of it? You asked us about it, but what do you think of the All-Star game? Do you guys like it? You guys don't remember the 80s, but what do you guys think of? Do you love watching the All-Star game? Let us know in the comments. And anybody else as well, let us know your take on it as to what you think of the All-Star format and anything you might suggest that could improve it. Another Jack and Finn question is, who do you think is the best goalie in the NHL right now? Now, they were asking pretty much at the beginning of the playoffs, but still, I don't know how much that answer is going to change from then to now. Has it changed for you?
I don't know. It's difficult for me to grade. Like, I'm more of a who do I love? I'm not looking at the goalies and saying, you know, who's the best? Who would I want on my team most? Who's making, like, I'm not looking at the stats and the save percentage. I'm looking at who I think is the most entertaining. Who do I get most enjoyment out of watching? Who do I tend to root for the most? That's kind of where I'm going with this question.
Okay, yeah.
So, because, I mean, there's so many good goalies, really, honestly, that who's the best on any given moment, some of these guys can really pull that save out of their butts, and they're just so fun, some of them. So I'm looking at who's got that extra kick where you got a little bit of maybe a little bit of fun personality, or who's going to make the save that you shouldn't normally make. And maybe it's not because they're so good, but maybe because they put themselves in a bad situation and they're kind of fun to watch because they put themselves in a bad spot, but they're athletic enough to get over there and make that save. You know,
I've got a guy in mind, but anyway, you would keep going. Tell me who that guy is for you.
Well, I wish that I could just come up with the name that you have, but I don't know. It's just, but like I said last show, I really enjoy Braden Holtby.
Yeah,
I think he's a lot of fun to watch. He's not necessarily what I just said. I think he's actually quite good technically and all that. He doesn't seem to be as out of control as some guys.
No, that's what he's stone cold.
And, you know, there's guys like Henrik Lundqvist that you just are just good, but I don't honestly necessarily get a big thrill out of watching him. He's just a good goalie, and you just expect from him what you expect. I almost take him for granted, I guess, as just the guy that's in the league, and he's going to be difficult to score on. But I'm not necessarily one. Same as like Dominic Hasek used to be. He was kind of fun to watch because he was all over the map, but at the same time, it was like, just let one in already. Like, it's we get it. We get it. Just, you know. So I guess Braden Holtby right now is a guy I like to watch. And, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury is one that I just really enjoy watching him in the net. I enjoy the feel of the game when he's a part of it. Yeah. When he's on, he's just so, like, the personality he has and the energy he gives off. Mm-hmm. I know he has some bad moments, and it's uncomfortable to watch sometimes for him. But when he's on, he's just what you need to have back there is your mindset, because it's so tough to be a goalie. You could be very stressed out all the time, and he just makes it seem like fun. Like, what's the big deal?
Josh, are one of these boys, Jack or Finn, are they goalies?
They're not goalies, but they do play goalie. In novice, we rotate, and they have played goalie more so than some of the other kids their age.
Okay, just
and
curious.
They're pretty awesome. They're pretty awesome because they're fearless. They just dive everywhere. They'll do anything that they need to make the save. So they're kind of what I'm looking at in some of these guys. I think that's like a Marc-Andre Fleury thing where he'll just do anything to make the save. That's what they're like. It's great.
Okay, I interrupted you. Were you on your way to finish in some point, or did that just
that was
get
my
lost?
Two. Like that was my two. I got the Braden Holtby. He's just like so. Like I said, he's just so cool back there. He's just, you know, just he just doesn't. He just seems bothered, but in a good way. Like that went in. Okay, let's just keep going. Like what, that went in too? No. And then Fleury, who's like just whatever, I'm in the NHL and I love it, and let's just have some fun with it, right? That's the kind of attitude I want to see out of the goalie.
Yeah. Yet Marc-Andre is among the most competitive too. Like they say, even in practice, they say that this guy, like in shootouts, he just won't let you score. He won't. He'll stay on after the practice is over, and he'll be dying not to let guys score. He hates it, right? So he gets upset, but he's very much lets it go, as you have to be a goalie. Or as I'm learning, as to be a baseball player, a batter, you have to let it go. That's another story. I want to take this question on to answer it directly first. I could only say in my mind, Carey Price. Like it's so easy to say that because everybody just says it, and it's hard to see sometimes because he's on Montreal Canadiens. Sorry to have to say that to people, but really, it just seems like you wish he were somewhere else sometimes. Although, God, I shouldn't be saying that, but. I just feel like, what would this guy be on some other team? Because it just seems to be like he's just so, you just see it. And again, most of the goalies, as you said, are not equal, but like are all very high level. Like there's so many number ones that are like, this is good enough to win with, as good as another guy almost, right? It's really hard to choose between most of the goalies. But there's something just watching him. He just reads the game like he's like a Sidney Crosby, but yet he's in goal and he's just on top of it. And he's like there way before it even happened. Or he knows it's going to happen. He's there before. Again, like a lot of them are, but on another level. And I just see him as being, he's just the best. He's just the best guy. I don't know. I don't know how else to say it, but I'm saying Carey Price is the best. Now taking the, go ahead.
I would say more than any other goalie in the league, now that you bring him up, I'm learning so much in the last couple of years watching the guy, Jacob Fancy. If you're watching, you're awesome with our kids and he develops our goalies. And yeah. I wish I'd paid more attention to goalie coaches when I was a scorer, because now that I know what goalies are trying to do, that I would. But to watch Carey Price, he is everything that our goalie coach is telling kids to do. And sometimes I wonder, like, why doesn't he look like he's struggling to get over there? Why doesn't he look like he's putting more effort in to get over there? And you see a big hole in the net, but then I'm learning that, you know, if you give up the net for 1 second to get yourself in the right spot to get a good push over there, then by the time you're over there, you're set and all that. Whereas if you scramble to get over there just for that 1 second save, then you're not set for the rest and you scramble for the whole time. Mm-hmm. So he's more of a like, you know what, if you shoot it there for the second I give it to you, you deserve the goal, and then I'll just slide over and take it away, and then you'll never have it again for the rest of your shift. Like that's what he's like. It's to see him, the way he slides around and the way he holds himself. He's just like a robotically, technically perfect goalie.
Yeah, and it seems like he's just watching in slow motion or something. Everybody doing something like, yeah, I could see that you're going to pass to this guy, and maybe pass, and he can see the couple passes ahead, just like these. We talk about these great passers and stuff. And then he's just following it. So I see that in a lot of the top level goalies. This is what top level players is, how, you know, the level of everything is going up, but he has it on, another level. He's like a Crosby. He's like a Crosby. Yes. And I see that. So I really feel Carey's the guy, but again, there's some guys that are right there that are so good. And there's so much equity in it that, and parity among goalies that you would like to have. There's a lot of guys that you would love to have as your number one. And, it's not like, oh, there's Carey and then everybody else. I will say, answering the question your other way, the guy that occurred to me immediately was Marc-Andre Fleury. I just love that guy. And then when you were describing him, I was like, I have a guy in mind. And I was thought you were describing Marc-Andre flying around, but then getting back. So he's technically sound, yes, but yet he does push across and then to push too far and then get himself back and out of position, then get himself back to make the save. And you just love watching this guy. You love watching him compete and you just love his whole attitude. One of the big things, some of the boys might know and people might know that he loves to tap the post when they hits the post. So he like almost as if the post made the save after the play goes away, he goes over and gives it a little love. He gives the rubs the crossbar wherever the puck hit. He just plays that game and fans can see that. And it's really fun. Teammates talk about him as being the ultimate teammate, and you've seen him go through some hard times and deal with it like a pro. And just generally, this guy is always smiling. Like, he's got a crazy big smile, which is part of it, but he just seems to be always smiling and always happy. And that's the report on him from all around. So if you want to add further elements as to what you want in a goalie as far as helping your team, locker room matters, right? The mood around the team matters. Leadership matters. In a team, it's not just about who's the best guy. It's about how well does your team come together as a team. And he's a guy that can add that. You can call it an X factor, but it's a real factor. And he brings that. So I just love Marc-Andre. Everybody loves Marc-Andre. And he's like one of the top goalies, like one of the most winningest goalies ever. Like, it's not even just like, you know, he's won like a couple cups, like this guy. And he almost took one third cup with Vegas as the starter. Again, it's like after he was written off from Pittsburgh. So give me a break. So Marc-Andre is right up in the top there. And I do want to add just as something now, because you made me think of it and then you actually named him, was the Dominator. Jack and Finn, boys, go look at this guy, Dominic Hasek. You could say, I mean, Josh is lamenting that just let a goal in already. Well, come on. I mean, he's lamenting how he was too good, right? Give me a break. The Dominic Hasek, I think, is the best goalie of all time. But that's a really controversial statement, maybe. But maybe not. Six Vezinas. Anyway, this guy is unreal. Oh, come on. This guy. And he was a league MVP even like twice, I think. I think he had two Hart trophies, I think. Not just once. So, I mean, this guy is ridiculous. So everybody recognized him as the best in the league. It was like, yeah, Dominic Hasek, the Dominator. His style was exciting. He was good just technically, but then he would also be able to make an extra save when he shouldn't be able to. He'd be flopping back and putting his arm behind. Some of the stuff you see some of the guys do, the Dominator was doing it first, and everybody aspired to be like that guy. I tell you, go look at some clips, get on YouTube, Dominic Hasek, check him out, young people, and see this guy, and then try to, you know, I mean, imagine today, translate it to today somehow, add that kind of compete and that kind of innovation and smarts and all of the stuff you want, and then put it into a modern goalie. And you've got, well, hope, and that, maybe we'll see another one who's the best ever, but Dominic Hasek, give me a break. No. Okay. You're just laughing at me getting just too excited about it. Yeah.
Make a note on our next show. I can't bring it up now. It's too long. It's just whatever, but make a note for me to talk about Bill Ranford sometime.
Bill Ranford. Let's do it. Yeah, this could be fun. We'll talk about another show. Maybe some throwback players, some of the best of all time will take up, something like that. Bill Ranford. So there you go, boys. I'm talking. I gave it to you. They also had another question about the Kraken. We had one show bringing up the new Seattle franchise, the Seattle Kraken. And they asked us, what are the first year expectations for the Kraken? Give our take on that. Again, why don't you start?
Well, I'm going to give the most boring non-answer there could be. I think back to they won't know this, but when the expansion happened in whatever 69 or whatever, when Pittsburgh came in and St. Louis Blues and whoever else it was at the time, mm-hmm. they had the actual original when it doubled. Anyway, it was the original six teams, and then they expanded and had six more teams. It was that time.
Yep.
And they had the six regular NHL teams in their own division and the six new teams in their division. Mm-hmm. And then St. Louis ended up playing Boston in the final and got swept. And it was when Bobby Orr won. I think that was Bobby Orr's first cup that year, whatever it was. Anyway, the problem was that the league those teams weren't balanced enough against the established franchises. Yeah. So it was basically a garbage league. It took those teams a long time to figure themselves out and get in with the rest of the group. So it was almost like two separate leagues. Whereas now, fast forward, and they'll recognize this, when Vegas came in the league, the way they had the expansion draft, it was just set up it was set up for success for the expansion team. It was set up for success for Vegas. There was no way for those teams to protect enough players to keep Vegas from being good. Now, George McPhee had to do a really good job at that, managing those things. And, you know, you still have a salary cap to work with and all that, but they ended up being very good.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Right away, because he was able to take advantage of the system. And I don't think teams had enough time to prepare for that, mm-hmm. to protect the players properly. Mm-hmm. Whereas now I think teams are onto it and they're like, well, we can't let that happen again. So mm-hmm. my boring non-answer is that I think the Kraken will be somewhere in between those. They'll be a little more competitive than the weakest teams in the NHL right now, just by virtue of the names that are going to have access to the players. But mm-hmm. I don't think they'll be able to maneuver to get as many of the high-end guys as Vegas was able to get. So they'll have to be like any other kind of mediocre team, that they'll have to work through then the draft or trades to make themselves get pushed over the edge. They'll be sort of right in the middle off the bat, but have a lot of work to do to get built up. That's my thoughts.
Okay. I'm right on. I'm agreeing right on. I might put them a little higher than the middle. So somewhere between middle to high, and that's about it. I got it. I got some insight on this through, I mentioned last week that I heard Rick Bowness on the Spit and Chicklets podcast being interviewed, Nova Scotia, Dallas coach, Rick Bowness, talking about Heiskanen, talking about all kinds of stuff. And he talked about his first years in the expansion years of the Ottawa Senators in 92, 93, I think, and how brutal they were and all that. And it was just terrible. They got blown out all the time. And it was really a tough learning experience. He said it was just, he said it served him well, but yet it was a really hard experience. And it was that they were able, the rules were so set up, they could protect so many players. Like there was so many that each team could protect, and you could really get only some of their lowest guys off of each team. So you really had a bunch of no names. And then what they did is change the rules. And that's how Vegas was able to, you can only protect, you know, one guy or something. So you protect your main guy, but you still expose a lot of guys to be picked up. And that's what Vegas was able to take advantage of. Now these rules haven't changed, so you're still going to have to make some tough decisions on these teams, which is why I say they're still going to be good. Yet I'm going to add in your point that you said other teams are going to deal with it a lot better. They're going to see what happened with Vegas and go, oh, how can we work within these still very restrictive rules and kind of protect a little better? But they still can't, they're still not free to protect much better. So they're still going to have to expose certain people. They're just going to be a little better at it. So that's why I say they're going to be mid to high range. So they're still going to be competitive almost right off the bat, similar to Vegas, but not quite in the same way. I will add about Vegas too, though, and I've said this before somewhere, but like we say that, oh, they were able to pick all these good guys and stuff, but nobody thought that when they picked them, like when they had all the guys they took and they had the team, there weren't commentators going, oh man, they've got this all-star lineup and they're just as good as everybody else. They were like, well, they got a lot of the dregs from these other teams. Like that's what they thought. And then that's what they banded behind. They said, we're the misfits. And who were these guys? Who was Carlson and, you know, Schmidt and all the, who were they at that time? They were what people thought were nobodies. And then they gelled together as a team. And even you mentioned recently in the playoffs, they had this no superstars yet, this identity if they play as a full team. And it's like, what are they? So, you know, I don't think Vegas necessarily got this great free ride, but as it turns out, right. it does look like you do get a lot of good guys, way more than you used to be able to. And Seattle's going to get that. Teams will probably do their best to really defend against it, but they're still going to have to give up some stuff. Give it up, boys. Seattle's taking some of your people.
That's a very important point. That's why I say, you know, George McPhee, he did something special there. Like now when you look at it, they got Pacioretty, they got Mark Stone, they got, you know, these guys that they shouldn't have any business going for because they should be trying to repair bigger holes in their lineup, but they didn't have those big holes to fill. So then they were able to have some fun with it and play with it. And you know, he was a very smart guy. He was very prepared and did the right things. Like, it is a very important point to mention, and I was one of the people that did not say this, that like we all are right. No one can say now, looking back as Captain Obvious, well, of course they were going to, because you still had question marks. They still didn't look to be that great on paper. They just became a great team because of the culture they created, because of the great job they did promoting the franchise and getting everybody in the city, in the league, in the fans, and all the players to buy into that sort of culture they've created there. So that is a very, very important point. And I wonder how much that's going to play a part in Seattle. I have no opinion on it. I'm not saying that, well, maybe Seattle won't be as good at that. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. I have nothing to base that on. It's just one more factor that may play a part in how these players, you know, because Vegas is a very attractive city in general.
Yep.
You know, people might already want to go there. And I don't know about Seattle. I have no idea. I'm not saying people do or don't, but it was very obvious for Vegas where I don't know that about Seattle. So maybe they may have a little tougher time getting people to buy in. Who knows?
Right. And that's also good. That's, you said they didn't have as many holes to fill. They got Pacioretty and Stone and all that. But it's also that it was an attractive place to go because right. they were good early. So it was a good place to go. And because it's an attractive place on top. So if Seattle can at least be competitive and be an attractive place to go winning wise or culture wise, yes. But it also is a big thing to do with how does the city take them and how does the whole thing, how does it seem as a place to be and live? These guys, this is their career. They bring their families there. They live in these places, right? So it really is a difference whether you live in New York City or Ottawa or, you know, Vancouver or Seattle or Ohio, Columbus, right? I mean, it really is different. And, you know, some people might enjoy certain, it's not to say one is better than the other. It's really about the individual and what they enjoy. So you're trying to sell it to players. And I don't know what they've got to sell, but it looks, certainly they got good uniforms to sell. We certainly brought that much up.
They have great uniforms and their Twitter account is gold. They're hilarious. I love it. The social media, the thing they have going is great.
Yeah. So they got lots going for them already. And I would say first year expectations are they should be competitive pretty, right. pretty quickly, but not, they're not Stanley Cup contenders right away necessarily. And they're certain, but they're certainly not rebuilding for 5 years before they're going to be any good. That's what I would put it at. Yeah. All right, guys. I want to jump to another listener question. So loyal listener Jason Cresswell once again comes in with a question. He's a Leafs fan and he wondered about Jumbo Joe Thornton coming over to the Leafs. And, you know, I wonder whether he might not be more of a third or fourth line player on this team, not necessarily a top six all throughout the whole season, but yet he can really help out the power play, et cetera. We mentioned like that. And Jason, being kind of getting back into hockey from his youth, he was into it and he's getting back into it and kind of learning about the game, wondered, well, how can you be a fourth line guy and but yet be a power play guy? What is that? Isn't that just the worst guys are on the fourth line? So what is that, Josh? What's the idea of, you know, being that, what is that kind of role? You know, power play is your top line, isn't it?
Well, I mean, for example, one way to look at it is let's just say there's a guy that's injured. And he's really good and he might not get a shift all game, but you dress him anyway because he's really good on the power play in a situation where he might not get hit that much, but he's just really smart player, effective with the puck when he's not under a lot of pressure. I mean, most of these guys are effective when they're under pressure, but just in the power play, you're under a little less pressure than 5-on-5. So you might dress a guy who's not, you know, only 60% healthy, but he still will help you on your power play. And Joe Thornton, it's not that he's not healthy. It's that why would you want to wear a guy like that out, grind him out for an entire season when really all you want him for is the playoffs like we talked about. So you give him a third or fourth line role. He's pretty effective. He'll help you out. He'll chip in. But you have – the Leafs are – I'm sorry. Everyone wants to say that that's, you know, ooh, they're so good. And yet somehow they refuse to, they always say, oh, well, Austin Matthews would be twice the player Leon Draisaitl was, we talked about, if he had a McDavid. Well, Austin Matthews is supposed to be your McDavid. So you get a guy like Thornton and you put him on the fourth line because you have guys like Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner to do all that.
And you've got Mitch Marner.
Doesn't have to be that guy.
Yeah, and John Tavares as well. Like, what else do you want?
And plus, like, you put a guy like Thornton on the third line, why not? If you're that deep, it puts him out also against the other team's third and fourth line, as opposed to him having to play minutes against all the other team's top defensemen all the time. It sets him up a little more for success at this stage in his career. But then you want to put him on the power play because he's still a ridiculously good passer. He's a very calming presence on the ice. So he's a little less panicky. You know, he's been around a long time and he just like, relax guys, we got this. And you can just go out and be a guy that controls things. He's just mm-hmm. got that presence on the ice, but that doesn't necessarily always translate to what you need on a first or second line unit, the kind of energy he can bring now and the kind of drive that you need to have to fight off the other team's top players all the time.
Yeah, he just can't be playing against those guys in that kind of grind. It's just not there.
Right.
You know, I saw a thing, a clip, Don Cherry took up this question or something. And I saw the clip and I was like, what is he saying? I want to hear what he's saying about this. Because it was a 2-minute clip or something. And it was like, he was like, Jumbo has to play. Joe has to play. He's used to playing. So he's got to play in the top six. He can't play in this thing. And I was thinking, what? Because for me, I'm like, yes, maybe, but not throughout a season. So in a season, he can like sometimes get it put up in the top six when you, at the end of a game or sometime during a game to boost it a little bit. And then, but generally have him third or fourth, fewer minutes during the season. And then the playoffs, you might put him there more often and not, right? But you're not going to, he's not going to be a top six guy on the Leafs. It's just, I don't agree with that idea at all, but I do, he is used to that kind of thing, but he's going to have to readjust to something else. And as you said, being a third or fourth line guy, he gets to go out against weaker opposition. Typically, for people who are not quite, overly hockey savvy, third and fourth line, like your top players, what you'd want ultimately, let's imagine this. You'd want Austin Matthews, John Tavares, and Mitch Marner or something as your three guys against Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Jake Gensel, and that's the game. And you just play like in a video game for 60 minutes, but you can't do that because people are physically limited. Or you might want two of them. So you get a little bit of a variety depending on to mix it up against a certain kind of thing. You want a certain type of matchup against a certain type of thing. So you get two lines or something, but it doesn't work that way. You need to give these players rest. So typically you want them on the ice as much as possible. That's why your top D pair, some of these guys can play 30 minutes a night sometimes, like these Gary Suters or Letang. 25 minutes is very high for a D. Forwards, a guy might play 22, 23 minutes, your top guy, Sidney Crosby, if you can get him out there that much, if he can handle it. And then your third and fourth line guys, this is what they exist for. They exist to be good players. And if they are deeper, you can play longer, but they might play 5 minutes in a game, 5-6 minutes, a fourth line guy. They may see 10 minutes if they're better, but that's all they get to play. They go out and take shifts so that Sidney Crosby can sit there and get a longer breather and you put him back out on the ice because you want to have him out as much as possible. So that's what they're there for. And so what is Jumbo now? You want to have him playing fewer minutes. I don't know what I'm going with this. I guess I was trying to say, what is a third or fourth line guy? But if you can upgrade that at any time, it's obviously better. But yet, to your first point, where you bring in a guy who's even hurt, as long as he contributes offensively when you have to cash in, that's what the power play is all about. That's why you have a guy like Jumbo. Ah, that was my point. I got it. See, my mind is working. My point was, you know, it's almost like, well, aren't you wasting a lot of time? Like you have to have people that are ready to play. Well, they only play 5 minutes anyway. So you only, if you're having them just for, you might as well have a good power play guy there if possible, or a good specialty guy, like a penalty killer on the fourth line or something, or somebody who can be it, you can put out there to go and bring some energy. This is what these fourth line guys are usually for. Now, to the extent that you can add skill and upgrade everything, it's much better. And this is what we're seeing in sports overall. Everybody's better. So the whole thing is getting better, but that's essentially what it is. So I see Joe as not having to put his body out. He's 41 years old already, right? So he's not having to, and he's a big guy, plays a big game. you know, he can't play top minutes anymore. So you don't make him, certainly during the regular season. Let him contribute to your power play. Let him help your top lines when they're struggling. Put him out there for a bit and juggle it up. Yeah, use him like that. You've got this great guy to use, but yet you don't have to put him out on the ice all the time like you do. You have to put Auston Matthews out as much as possible.
And you'll have to help me out with the roster, but look at it this way. I mean, you're paying Matthews. Do you want Thornton to play more than Matthews? No. Do you want him to play more than Tavares? No. Do you want him to play more than Marner? No. Do you want him to play more than Nylander? Probably not. Like, do you want him to look at their roster, go down, and whose spot is he taking in the top six? Really? I know he's a legend and all, but I'll go back to the 87 Canada Cup, and as legend has it, Mike Keenan was going around the room, and yet that's an assembly of every team's first line, like top guy. They're all captains and everything of their teams, and they're all playing on the same team. And he's going, they're used to playing 25, 30 minutes a night, taking 3 minute shifts, and they're going against the best in the world. And he's going around the room going, okay, guys, let's talk about the ice time here. You know, do you think it's all right if Mario plays 25, 30 minutes? That's probably all right, right? You can accept that. Wehner, probably going to play 25, 30 minutes. You know, Dale Hawerchuk, probably going to get top line minutes, right? So we're all okay with that. So that leaves 30 minutes for the three lines to split between them. Then you got a guy like, you know, whoever it is, you know, whoever they were in 87, you got to, all those Brian, Islanders players. That
Brian
Trottier,
yeah.
You know, they're winning the cup, but, you know, but we already talked about how Mario and Wayne and Hawerchuk and these guys are going to get the top line minutes. So are you okay with now 15 minutes a night? You know, if you went to them at a camp and said that, you know, you're going to play 15 minutes, they're like, what are you talking about? But then when you go around the roster and realistically look at it, whose minutes are they going to take? Mm-hmm. So, you know, he had to get all those guys to buy in to play 8 minutes. Because why wouldn't you have the other guys on the ice? And sure enough, they bought in. It's all about what you want out of your team and the culture you're trying to create. Mm-hmm. And that's the Leafs have such a lineup now that they're supposedly – you know, right there, and Thornton's supposed to just be a buildup of that. He's not the guy you went and got. He's the guy you went and filled out with.
Yeah.
So whose spot is he taking on the top six?
Well, nobody's. And the 87 Canada Cup you mentioned, they bought in and they won as well.
Right.
So that's why Jumbo is going to deal with less minutes. And I'm sure he's probably happy with that. I mean, everybody wants to play, but at the same time, you can really enjoy this role and embrace it. And then kind of, again, for 700,000 and for being 41, you're expected to bring a lot less. And then, you know, I love the policy of under promising and over delivering. I don't want to over promise and under deliver. I love going in on the Leafs third, fourth line, power play, 700,000. Joe is going to deliver over deliver big time. So if he's put in that role, if you want him to be to be one of your top guys, no. So anyway, and I do want to add for the kind of people newer to hockey and stuff. Josh mentioned 3 minute shifts. That was the 80s. Nobody, a 45 second shift is long these days, and a power play shift, even over a minute, that's pretty long. But 30, 40 seconds and you're off.
That blows my mind whenever I coach kids and they're like, well, I just got on. And I'll pull up stats like I'm very big on shift length, as you know. That's part of the thing we can talk about on another show.
Yep.
Is ice time. Do I think you should ride your superstars to death all the time? No, I don't. I don't think that's the way to go.
No.
I think you should be as four line of coach as possible. But regardless, some kids are coming out, well, that was barely a shift. What are you talking about? I'm not even tired. And I'm thinking, exactly. Because now you're ready to go back out again. Plus, it's less time to go. And I'll show these superstars, like, you know, Jonathan Toews, and I'll pull up their info. And it's like, what do you have? 27 shifts, and he played 23 minutes. So what does that tell you guys? And, they don't get it right away. And I'm like, well, if he played 27 shifts and it's only 23 minutes, is he playing over a minute a shift? No, the math doesn't work out. Sometimes it's even worse, like way worse. Like sometimes it's like 37 seconds a shift or whatever. Like they'll play like, especially if you sneak on for a power play or if you're managing them right, you can sneak these guys on when you catch the other team on a line change or they have a line caught off or if you get a quick icing, you sneak them on for a 20 second shift go take your offensive opportunity. And then when the puck's cleared, you come off. If you can get your players to do that some, then you can give them that extra ice time without overly extending their shift length and putting them in situations where they're going to get tired or fail. So like, I try, and it's very impossible to tell an 11-year-old that, but if you have those numbers, say, you know, 29, 30 shifts a game, but only 21, 22 minutes overall, and you can at least build on that. Maybe in 3 years, I just made it easier for their coach in 3 years to get that through their head because they've already been introduced to that concept.
Yeah. Like, you might have made it easier for their math teacher too. You're bringing them, you know, putting it in situations that they care about, right?
Right.
Although, come on, what are you pulling math lessons out in the middle of your thing? Are like specialization people, come on, get you, do your job here. They should be able to see 23 and 27 and go, oh, that's less than a minute. But I want to jump on your, that, you know, but I'm not even tired. And you're like, exactly. And you could show a clip of somebody, you know, not being able to back check and you get scored on. You're like, see that guy was tired. Right. And that's what you don't want to be. You don't want to be that guy getting caught out too long. You want to come off, go out on a high note. We know what George Costanza showmanship, go out on a high note. Don't get down to where you're going to be in a position of failure before you come off. So,
and yeah. The other part of that is if you can get all of your team to buy in on that, if everyone's taking 45 seconds, then when you come off, you're only just over 2 minutes before you're back on the ice again. Where if everyone takes a minute and a half shift, it's 4.5 minutes and you haven't touched the ice.
And no wonder you don't want to come off. And then you want to stay out even longer.
Longer. So it's a vicious cycle. Like you vicious just, cycle. Really, you got to keep everybody involved and engaged for as long as you can. And the easiest way to do that is just roll them on and off. Let's keep the momentum going.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier about the 5-minute fourth line guy or something, but I do love the idea of rolling them to the extent you can, to the extent that your team is good enough and your players are responsible. And if you have fourth line players that you can trust that you play a lot, that's beautiful because you can get really good matchups and stuff with your first line against some other. You can really do a lot more when you have everybody available. When the other team's only playing fewer people, you'll be able to catch them a lot better on matchups. So. There's all of that. That's pretty much all for the listener questions. But I did, there was just one story before we go, want to bring up that's going on around here. Joey Moss of the Edmonton Oilers and then the Edmonton football team for several years in Edmonton. When we were young, we'd be called a stick boy, water boy, towel boy, whatever they, you know, he was an equipment manager for the oil for over 35 years or so. Joey Moss, was the guy we knew when we was young. He was Wayne Gretzky, who had been dating a girl, and that was one of her brothers. I heard it was he was the 12th of 13 kids. Good God, what was going on back in the day? But as we know, Joey had Down syndrome, and he grew up like that. And Wayne suggested to who was it at the time? Who was the GM?
Was it Peter Pocklington?
No, good God, it was no. Not him.
Was it Slather?
Yeah, against Glenn Sather. Glenn and he mentioned Slather? Glenn Sather. Yeah.
Yes, I don't think thank you. Sather.
Yes.
Anyway, I know who he is. I'm a big Oilers fan. You know that. Slats. Let's just go with Slats.
Okay, Slats. Anyway, so he asked him can Joey help out with the team? And he thought it was a good idea. And they brought him in. And of course, he stayed around for over 35 years, got involved with the Eskimos. He's everything for the community. And everybody's talking about it these days because he's just passed away. Wayne's been interviewed on it a lot. He's been a friend of Wayne's for a long time. And he's just talking a lot about his contributions to the community. I'll say a little bit on that. But first, what are your own recollections of Joey growing up? Because I recall a few things about this guy when we were young. Anything come to mind when you think about Joey Moss?
Now, it's funny you talk about young because I actually have a slightly older memory now of, I want to say it was the 06 run when the Oilers made the final. And I talk about that with the way the anthem's there. Don't quote me on it. It's that one. But I just remember being a little bit older and the Oilers went on a bit of a run and the anthem singing and Joey Moss just belting out the anthem at the top of his lungs is one of my favorite things. The emotion, the passion, you could tell he was just a guy that just wanted to be there so badly. And you were so happy for him. And I was jealous of him. Like, I want to be in that spot. Like, he just was having such a good time. And then just to watch him belt that anthem out, that's something that sticks out in my mind big time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I recall just much like when we were young, just being aware of this guy who was in a sports franchise. Speaking of being jealous of a guy, like, how does this guy get a job with the Edmonton Oilers? He's hanging out. And I always remember that public service announcement they had. And I've just watched it recently just to see, just to remember what it was like. And I was like, yeah, I can remember these images. And Wayne was kind of just saying how Joey's a, you know, productive member and he really contributes to their club. And it shows him all the tasks he takes on. And Wayne brought it up again. He was saying that one thing that Joey did for the community was really give a lot of parents hope to say that if your child grows up with a challenge or a disability, then they can really live and live a good life. And Joey, to me, I mean, he lived 57 years. And I recall thinking that people with Down syndrome didn't usually live that long. And the idea of being 57 years old, I think a lot of that would have to do with him having a productive purpose. This sounds almost like my Mr. Brightside show, but really productive purpose being an essential component to a life of meaning and happiness. So Joey, I mean, this guy lived a life better than most people. So the idea, if you think that anybody in any walk of life can't live a certain life because of how, you know, the circumstances under which they're born or their anything to do with their things beyond their control, that's all a bunch of BS, because it's about the choices you make and the things you do. And Joey certainly proved that. In that PSA, when I grew up, I just remember always at the end of the commercial where they're looking at each other and then they do that little action where they go like, Casey! Do you know what he even said there? I just watched it again. I was like, what are they saying?
I always just thought he said Gretzky's name. That's it. But I don't know. It's just a memory we have. Yeah. Where we just implanted it. I don't know. I haven't seen that commercial in some time, but I certainly remember it. It's a happy memory.
Well, I watched it today thinking of the show, and I was just like, okay, there they go. And I don't even know what he's saying. So I guess maybe we just made up that he's saying Gretzky. Anyway, you can see for yourself. Yeah. So I don't really have that much insight into Joey Moss's life or anything like that. Nothing that we want to add. There's lots you can look up about it. A lot of Gretzky's getting interviewed about it. A lot of people writing stories and commenting on it. But I just thought we'd mention it here because I've just always been aware of this guy in Edmonton since I was young. And obviously all through, as Josh said, doing the anthem and still today. And then here he is. It's finally come full circle. And anyway, what a life lived for Joey Moss, and what an example and inspiration to a lot of people. So that's all of it from us today. Jack and Finn, I hope that we answered your questions okay. If you're looking for anything else, go ahead and ask us some more. Anybody else, ask us any questions about anything to do with youth hockey development, the NHL, anything to do with the game. We love the game. We love to talk about it. No question is too small or too big for us to deal with. And I'll appreciate all of that. Until next time then, guys, enjoy the off season. Again, I hope good stuff happens for your team. We'll see you guys next time.
Whatever. All right.
Anyway, it is what it is. Get the CBC towel and tell us all it is what it is. And you'll have more to say about it than me. Better stuff too.
That'll be good. Of course.
Yeah.
That's a given. They don't call it Bolton unassisted.
That's right.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.